done fell right down that rabbit hole. So reality is questionable. Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on the show. It's paranormal overload with Southern hospitality. Haunted murder, mayhem, tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right, hey.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Paul, and their dog Ninja.
Sometimes their cat, Freddy, but never the ferrets.
Hey, yep. This is Tommy Chong. Right now, you're listening to the Hillbilly Horror Stories. Ooh, gotta listen to them.
In a world where darkness lurks around every corner, one name stands out among the rest. The Zodiac.
We had a double homicide that took place last night. 16-year-old girl and a 17-year-old boy. The boy was shot right at the side of the car, and the girl apparently tried to run. We have no motive at this time.
His first words were, "I want to report a double murder. And I also killed those kids last year."
Step into the shadows with Foul Play Crime Series, chilling new season. Follow a predator who took the lives of five known victims, yet claimed a terrifying 37 across Northern California in the late 1960s. The Zodiac penned taunting, boastful letters and made disturbing phone calls.
"This is the Zodiac speaking."
Craving attention, he unveiled haunting confessions while toying with law enforcement over their failure to catch him.
"The police having a good time with the code."
Complex, intricate codes accompanied some of his letters, ciphers with hidden meaning that would take decades to break.
"I got a very taunting, creepy feeling from the call."
"It felt that the word kill or killing would appear in his code."
Listen to The Zodiac, releasing weekly, right now on Foul Play Crime Series.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 396 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. My name's Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Tracy, obviously we start off every show by thanking our military and civil servants all over the world. No matter which country you represent, thanks to all you men, women, and service animals who keep us safe every single day.
You guys are always in our prayers every single night. I pray for you guys. And we can't thank you enough for, you know, defending our country and just, you know, making us feel safer at night when we sleep. So we love you guys and prayers to you all every night. Take care.
Tracy, I had somebody write me a couple of days ago. They are in a rehab, going through, you know, they're trying to fix some things that are wrong in their life.
Good for them.
And, but they were just needed to talk because they just, you know, they're kind of all alone, and, you know, this person in particular had access to a phone and to be able to talk, so it's not completely restricted, but he just didn't feel like he had anybody else to reach out to, so they reached out to me.
Oh, good.
And, so, I mean, just to let people know, no matter what your situation is, it helps to talk to people. It always helps to talk to people. You know, don't ever feel like you're alone, because as long as you can reach out to either one of us, you're definitely not alone.
That is correct. Anytime, day or night, guys, we'll be there for you. And, you know, just lend an ear, whatever we can do. But kudos to you for doing that. That's taken a great step, so I'm very proud of you for that. If you guys also can talk to people on the page, they are wonderful. And you can also contact people in the group, which we are very proud of. You can also call the crisis hotline at 988. You can text at 741-741. We're always here for you guys.
All right, Tracy. With that being said, first of all, I want to thank everybody who responded to the episode that we did last week on the Moffitt family haunting. I personally feel like it was the best, if not one of the top three best, depending on who you know who you would talk to. But I think it might have been our best story we've ever done, and we had a lot of feedback from people who absolutely loved the story.
Good, and that's what we need, guys. We need your feedback so we can, you know, improve on stuff or go a different direction of what you want to hear. I enjoyed that story last week too as well. But yeah, thank you guys so much for writing and telling us it was, that you enjoyed it.
The other thing I want to address at the beginning, we initially planned on doing this a little later, but we got a review of somebody complaining about the commercials at the beginning of the show, and that made me go back and look at it, and there had been a problem literally for months that I was unaware of that was putting all these extra commercials at the beginning of the episodes. There should never be any more, you know, some of it's out of our control, but 2 to 4 30-second commercials, about 2 minutes max, mm-hmm. is all there should ever be at the beginning. And there were sometimes 6, 8, 10 commercials.
Oh my goodness.
Playing. So the 5, 6 minutes worth of commercials. And we wouldn't have known that because mm-hmm. we don't go back and check that kind of thing. And it was a glitch that has since been fixed. I had to go through manually and take out months worth mm-hmm. of episode of commercials on each episode. Would that take like 4 hours?
Yeah,
to go back and manually fix that, because that's not what we want. That's you know, I'm all about trying to make money, but I'm not trying to load people up on commercials at the beginning. Now we do sometimes do that at the end of an episode because most people cut it off before mm-hmm. that time, but it's just a little podcasting trick out there, but never at the beginning. That should never have been the case. And I just wanted to apologize for anybody who felt like we were doing it on purpose. We just didn't know it was out there. And
right.
Until
so,
we got that review.
Froggy to Sunny, which I love. That name is pretty cool. Thank you so much for, I mean, I know it was kind of a bad review, but this bad review we needed to hear.
Yeah, because unfortunately he may not even, or she may not even be listening anymore, because if I was a new listener to a show and the first thing I heard was 8 minutes worth of commercials or something at the beginning, I probably wouldn't tune back in.
No, I agree. So thank you for letting us know that. And we apologize to everybody else out there. So hopefully you just fast forwarded through it. But, you know, we don't like that stuff. So, but I'm glad that they let us know so we could fix the problem.
Yes, and it is fixed going forward. And in any of the past episodes, it should be fixed now. So, all right. So last week's story on the Moffitt family haunting, it was daunting. It was a pretty long story. It was full of twists and turns and you name it. Very fun episode. This week, we are going to do a multi-story episode. So I've got two stories to start off with, and we're going to finish with the third story. And that third story is a long one. And I won't say it's on par with the Moffitt family haunting, but it's not that far off. I think you guys are going to be, this could be an awesome back-to-back episode.
Good.
Situation. All right, so this first story involves a lake monster in Lake Michigan. I'm going to be very, I'm going to be very transparent here. I don't like doing lake monster stories. I just don't.
But you would if one of them got them and grabbed you.
It just, I don't know. It's, once again, some things just don't fascinate me. UFO stories, for the most part, don't. Lake monster stories don't. But for the every once in a while, I'll find that one that I pay a little more attention to. And I know other people like it, so it's not all about me. So I did a lake monster story.
All right.
This one is in Lake Michigan. And it's definitely no surprise that there are all kinds of strange and unidentified creatures in Lake Michigan. In fact, the first sighting of what is thought to be a sea monster goes all the way back to August 16th, 1867.
Pretty far back.
This was near Hyde Park, which is in Chicago. And that's when Josh Mulwood, he was actually looking out over the water and he spotted what he described as a vast monster.
A vast?
Yeah. Like a large monster. You know how they talk back in the 1800s.
Oh, yeah. I knew that's what that meant, but
yeah, you thought it like it was a vast, like a one word or something?
No.
So he described it as part fish, part serpent. That's another word that doesn't get used as much today. Serpent.
Mm-hmm.
So it was as wide as a barrel and approximately 40 feet long, according to him.
Good grief.
He would actually go on to say that it had a triangular shaped head, sort of like a seal, but it had very prominent eyes.
No, wait. Seals' heads ain't triangle-looked.
I'm just going by what the man said.
He needs to quit drinking, because that can't be true.
He said it swam with a snake-like motion, and then it just disappeared beneath the waves. But that wasn't going to be the only sighting of that same creature. That same summer, crews aboard a tugboat named the Crawford. It came upon another ship by the name of Schuyler. They would both report incidents involving the same creature. This was offshore of Evanston, which if you guys are just curious, that's where Northwestern University is, also in the Chicago area. Mm-hmm. So very similar place to where Hyde Park was when they saw it. So you're in the same neck of the woods. They described it as violently thrashing its tail and churning water all around their vessels. I guess they were right there next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So both crews saw the same thing at the same time.
Yeah.
Both of these crews confessed to seeing the creature on multiple occasions just that month alone.
What, they just never said anything to anybody? Or?
Well, I mean, I guess they did. That's why they said they confessed.
Oh, I almost missed that. I thought you meant when they confessed, you know.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm saying. But they said they saw it several times. Uh-huh. But I mean, just because we're talking about it now, don't mean they held on to it for 20 years. They said it back then. The crews described it as being eel-like, approximately 30 to 60 feet in length. Again, that's right up there with the other description.
Mm-hmm.
These crews would go on to say that it had distinctly a reptilian head. So, kind of like the guy said, he said triangular shaped head. That would be kind of,
well, that's true.
Like a, you know, turtle or something. I would consider that
a turtle.
No, I'm saying like a turtle's head's kind of triangular if you kind of look at it.
Are you on crack? It is not. Good grief.
Sightings would happen for years to come. So now let's fast forward a little bit to late March 1893. There was a naval officer by the name, I'm not making this up either, H.R. Brinkerhoff. That was his real name.
Okay.
But he was actually reading up in the second floor quarters at Fort Sheridan. He just looks up from his book, looks out the window, and he sees the creature. He said initially what he thought he spotted was a large black shape. It was around 40 feet long, just gliding across the surface. So he called somebody else over so he could, you know, not look like an idiot when he had told everybody. And he wanted to have at least one eyewitness. They never did figure out what it was.
Never.
Another account would come in 1885. And it was actually quoted in the Portland Daily Press. The creature would poke its head up and they would see it plainly with their naked eyes. The head was very large. It was dark on the top and light underneath. Now they're talking about like a, you know, like an alligator or something. We'll have one shade of skin on top and underneath it's a different shade, which makes for good boots.
You get
a two-tone. They said that it couldn't see the features distinctly, but it did appear to have an alligator head.
Man, this is some kind of thing. I wonder what the heck.
By this time, the creature appeared to become stuck in a patch of ice near the pier.
Oh, did they try to help him?
I don't think they did. It then disappeared. But it quickly came back to the surface and right in the exact same spot where it had before. It then turned and left the area and they had no clue what it was. These sightings actually go on into the 1900s. And one of the last sightings was in 1937. It was witnessed by the crew of the passenger ship, the SS Theodore Roosevelt. Captain, I didn't make this up either, Captain G.E. Stufflebean.
That's a fun name.
Described it as a 60-foot long creature.
Oh, now he's exaggerating. It was 40. Come on now.
Well, some of them said between 30 and 60. One of them said between 40 and 60.
But you know.
But you're trying to estimate if it's got, if it's curled up like kind of an S type thing, you're trying to estimate.
No, I understand. But it seems like this creature is not harmful. I mean, I would think there's so many times he could do something to somebody.
Well, he spotted this about 4 miles off the shore. And this time it was seen from like the headlights of the boat because it was nighttime. But it was illuminated by the ship's floodlights on there. He said the thing twisted through the water at a remarkable speed. At the time this was happening, it was such a big deal that passengers ran to the deck and to kind of see what this ruckus was all about before seeing the creature eventually dive under the water. The crew had no clue what it was, but they said it didn't match any kind of a whale or a fish that they knew that inhabited the lake as far as Lake Michigan.
So, you mean it wasn't a turtle?
It was not a turtle. I just said a turtle's head was triangle. I'd never assumed this thing was turtle. If I got to sit here and draw a turtle's head for you, you'll see that it's more triangular.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Think about like a rattlesnake, the shape of a rattlesnake's head. Turtles are kind of shaped that same way. All right.
Whatever you say, my love.
All right, let's go to another crazy story. Remember, these two stories are just the little bonus stories before the, these are the appetizers.
Oh.
All right. We're going to start off by saying that this took place in Lancaster, California, many years ago. Our subject is David, and that's all I've got as a first name.
Mm-hmm.
He and his girlfriend were enjoying some time at the dunes, and their initial plan was to meet up with some friends there, but for whatever reason, their friends never showed up. So, around midnight, they were like, you know what, been a long day, we're going to call it a night, and they decided that they were going to go ahead and leave and go back home. Now, at the time, they were at 150th Street East and the intersection of Avenue K.
Okay.
So that's where they're at. I know you don't have a clue where that is, mm-hmm. neither do I, but
no.
That's where they were. They're heading home. It's a very dark night. They had heard dogs barking pretty much the whole time they had been at the dunes, so they really didn't pay any attention to it. This area was filled with coyotes, and they thought, well, you know what? It's probably either the coyotes or it's the coyotes upsetting the dogs. One thing or another, that's what's causing the barking. They're in the car, and as they approach the intersection of the two streets I just told you, Avenue K and 150th, David saw something moving up ahead on the road. All he could tell at this point is it was something large. Whatever it was, it turned its head and looked at David's car. He knows this because at the time that it turned its head, its eyes were shining in his headlights, kind of like a deer would do or some other type of animal.
Maybe he just liked his whip.
Look at you. It crossed the road the whole time, continuing to stare at the car. David and his girlfriend then turned westbound onto Avenue K. Whatever he saw threw him into shock, at least temporarily.
Did she see it?
Yeah. Well, oh. We'll get into that.
I'm sorry.
So much so that when he looked down at his speedometer, he was going 145 miles an hour.
Whoa.
He immediately slowed down and his heart was racing. He looked over at his girlfriend and he asked if she had seen what they had just seen. She was also in shock, and all she could do was nod her head yes. David dropped her off at her house, and then he drove home. After getting to the house, he promptly calls the sheriff's department. He didn't really want to sound like a lunatic right off the bat, so instead of just telling the sheriff what he had seen, he starts off by asking if there had been any disturbances reported in the area of 150th Street East and Avenue K. Well, the deputy asked him for some more details about, you know, what kind of disturbance he might be looking for. But David didn't really know how to describe it. So the deputy was starting to get kind of annoyed by his vagueness. And he just bluntly said to David, "What exactly are you talking about?" So David took a deep breath and he said, "Well, I'm going to tell you, but you aren't going to believe it." And he describes exactly what he had seen. So the deputy almost instantly replied with, "You know, that could have been a Bigfoot."
Oh.
David seems to think that the deputy was just patronizing him.
Yeah.
But the deputy said before David could even say anything, "I'm serious. Really, we've had reports of Bigfoot in that area. And with the drought we've been having, everything is just coming down the mountain. Just this morning, they had to pull a 400-pound black bear off of the 14 freeway." So David just thanked the deputy and hung up.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's bizarre, but
so he doesn't at least know what, he doesn't know what he saw.
Yeah.
And but the deputy wasn't playing. He literally was being honest when he said maybe you saw Bigfoot.
Well, good. That's awesome, though.
I would do that if I was a deputy.
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah.
So, all right. Are you ready for the last story? Because here's the key to the night. This story is awesome.
Okay. Let's do it.
All right, Tracy. On with the best story of the night. This is a fun one. Our subject is Jared. No, not the one from Subway. That's scary for all the wrong reasons.
Mm.
This Jared, though, seems to have paranormal events follow him wherever he goes. He had his first experience. Now, I want to say this, too. I actually don't know why I did it this way, but this thing is all over the place as far as the dates of things happening. So I bounce back and forth between years. It's not really in one particular order. So
okay.
I just put his experiences in the order that I thought they were cool, and they didn't necessarily line up. The first experience was Christmas Eve, 1994. He was just 12 years old at the time. Jared hears some children talking outside his house. He was excited that, you know, there was children out there and enjoying the Christmas Eve. But then he was like, you know what? It's really late. Why are there children outside of their home? He decides to walk outside to take a look. And much to his surprise, there's no one outside. In fact, there was freshly fallen snow. And he could plainly see that there were no footprints anywhere in the snow. He just kind of shrugged it off like, you know, most kids his age probably would. And that was his first experience. Nothing fantastic.
Yeah.
But that's what kicked everything off. 4 years later, in March 1998, things would ramp up a little bit. It was an evening around 11:30 p.m. He was sitting on the couch watching Married with Children, one of the best shows ever. He was the only person in the house awake at this time. All the pets were even asleep. So this gets weird. Jared hears an evil, maniacal laugh. That's his terms. This laughter was coming out of his sister's room. Now, you got to know that her door was cracked just a little bit. I guess I probably should have said ajar. I don't know. But that's what cracked a little bit.
Right.
So the door was cracked just a little bit. Well, he ignored it, as Al Bundy would have done.
Yeah, he would have.
But it happens again, and again after that. So he jumps off the couch, he runs to the kitchen, and he grabs not one, but two knives. He then runs into his parents' bedroom. Now, kids or adults, don't run through the house with knives in your hand. Especially multiple, you know.
Seriously.
Just don't do it. You're not Edward Scissorhands. He wakes his parents up. His dad was not a happy camper. He tells Jared to go back to bed and quit waking him up. So from that point on, strange things would just happen on a more regular basis. TVs would turn on and off by themselves. Furniture could be heard moving. Faucets turning off and on in the house. And like I said, I'm going to bounce all over the place. So we're going to jump ahead to 2000. This is probably the most significant event that would happen. This one actually had five other witnesses. Jared and his sister and a few friends decided that they were going to go out and buy a boatload of balloons. Follow me on this.
Mm-hmm.
Why, you ask? Because they wanted to fill Jared's room up with the balloons. So what? Picture this. You've got a room with so many balloons in it. It's not, you know, filled to the rim. But just think of more balloons that should ever be in a room. And they were like flailing their arms and knocking balloons everywhere, that type of stuff. And they were also being very loud.
I mean, what was the purpose of that? Just to do it, to have fun?
I guess just to do it.
Okay.
Because you got, this is 2000. Jared was 12 in 94. So, I mean, this actually puts him at like 18.
Yeah. Damn.
I don't know. And so anyway, they're in there, they're doing this, they're being loud. Well, Jared's parents were not big on being woke up, as we have found out from the past. But did Jared care? Nope. They're in there just making a racket. And someone whispers, "Shut up." But this was more like a subliminal thing. All of them, all five of them, hear it in their head at the same time. As they're all making noise, they all heard it inside their mind. Jared said that it sounded like it was being said in a static, metallic type tone. Almost like a robot or something, computer generated. So they all stopped and they stared at each other. A feeling of dread swept over the entire room, and everyone felt petrified. The group could not get over the fact that they had just all heard the same thing in their heads.
That is very weird.
The next day, Jared asked his parents if that ruckus had awoken them, but surprisingly, they said no. So the next incident took place when Jared and actually got a call from his father. His father ran a mail route and his car had broken down. So he called Jared to come pick him up. Jared said that the house had a very silent but dreary feeling all day long. And so when he got this call, he was kind of glad to get out of the house. So get this. He walks out of the house and then he realizes he forgot something that we've all done before and then had to immediately walk back in. He walks right back into the house, but he said that short period of time that he had walked out and walked back in, the feeling in the house had completely changed for the worse. He immediately felt like that he should leave, but he didn't. In fact, he continued down the hallway of the house. And as he walked down the hallway towards a closet, the closet door blew open. Clothes went flying across the hall. He said he ran like hell to get out of the house.
I would imagine.
So picture that. You're walking down a hallway and a closet door just flings open and clothes start blowing out of it. That's crazy.
It is. Meanwhile, his dad's like, "Where the hell are you?"
Yeah.
Something broke down.
"Hello, it's hot out here."
Mm-hmm.
The next event happened when Jared stayed at a friend's house. This is actually my favorite of the stories, that just because of what happens. But he stays at his friend's house. He gets up at 6 a.m. the next morning, and he comes home. As he walks to the door, his dad was pissed. Not because Jared stayed out till 6 a.m. He apparently knew he was spending the night. But he is yelling and he's screaming, and Jared is like, "Why are you so irate?" And his dad says, and I quote, "That damn ghost attacked your sister last night and you should have been here."
Oh, my. Oh, no.
So Jared said, "Okay, I need to go talk to her, I guess." So he immediately goes down and talk to his sister about what went on. She says that she was talking on the phone and she began to feel dread building up in the house. You'll see this is a constant trend that happens with the dread thing. So she wanted to get into her room and close the door. I guess she was probably somewhere else in the house. So she goes to her room. She closes the door. But she had to still get ready for bed. So she starts doing this. She's getting ready for bed. And there was a stack of folded laundry, primarily towels, that were sitting on a chair that she could see from her bathroom, okay?
Mm-hmm.
She said she could look over and sees that the stack of laundry starts moving a little bit. And she watched the entire stack fall off the chair. She goes into the room and restacks the laundry. She then continues to get ready for bed. She said that's when the dread started to really build up, and suddenly the stack of laundry was thrown to the floor with a strong amount of force. Now the dread's really starting to build in intensity, and at the same time, something started pounding on her bedroom door, so hard that she thought it was going to break it down. She starts screaming and crying, which woke up her parents. Sure they were thrilled about that. Hell, from what we've learned about how her parents get, you know, hate to get woke up, I'd probably be more scared of that than this thing.
Well, my whole thing is, why are you blaming Jared? If you weren't there, why didn't you go down there and protect her?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, her parents would later say that they heard all this commotion as well. Not too long after that night, Jared and a friend were at a house playing video games. Well, Jared hears a strange sound that he knows, but he can't quite place what it is. The dread starts to fill the room. He turns around and he sees where the noise is actually coming from. He's got a stereo behind him, and the stereo had turned on. And as he looks a little closer, he sees that the CD changer was also turned on. So after turning itself on, the CD changer starts cycling through the discs.
Oh.
For you younger kids out there, yeah, we used to have a 5 and 8 and 12 disc changers that you could put several CDs in and go back and forth. Though I never did that.
I
played one CD at a time.
Oh my gosh.
So it gets to the third disc and it starts playing I Can't Get No Satisfaction by the Stones. Jared moves out of the house shortly after that. Now, Jared, looking back, says that he can tie many of the experiences he had back to electricity. For example, on the front porch, they had two porch lights, okay? Mm-hmm. One of these bulbs was completely burnt out. Had been for a while, just didn't work. It was like an electrical problem. On this particular day, the skies were very clear. It's daytime. But there was a flash in the sky that appeared to be lightning. Then there was a thunderous boom. And immediately after this, that broken light on the porch started working. But now the other bulb was out. But we're not done just yet, trust me. I know when I said he moved out and all this stuff, people were probably thinking, oh, this is the end. No.
Mm.
No, we're nowhere near. We're just getting started. July 24th. Of the year 2000, Jared sees a craft hovering above him, right above his house. He does some research to try to figure out what he possibly witnessed. Jared finds out that there have been reports like his going all the way back to 1923 in his neighborhood. Back in 1987, in fact, the same type of craft almost landed on a Pennsylvania Route 30, which is a very busy road.
Ooh.
So he lived in Pennsylvania.
Right. That's scary. God, can you imagine driving your car down the interstate and see something like that?
No. So that road runs right through Chestnut Ridge, which is a true paranormal hotspot. Matter of fact, our buddy Seth Breedlove from Small Town Monsters, he did a whole documentary on Chestnut Ridge that I think is still on Amazon. So if you get a chance, check it out. That place is crazy. We need to do a show on Chestnut Ridge. So that might be in the near future.
Okay.
It's one of those places where, like the Bennington Triangle and some of the others, where there's creatures and ghosts and all kinds of paranormal stuff, along with UFOs mm-hmm. that are constantly being reported there. So if you get a chance, check that out on Amazon. I guess I didn't really tell you what happened the night that Jared saw this thing. I said he just saw a craft. I should probably go into some more details. So he was outside stargazing. And he actually had a group of people with him, so he wouldn't by himself. And they're just talking about life in general, looking at the sky. And they heard a deafening, continuous boom coming from the sky out in the west. So they're looking in that direction, but there's nothing there. But straight above them was a 200-foot-long craft that's the size of two football fields that was low enough that they could actually hit it with a rifle had they had one.
Mm-hmm.
That was a strange rule of measurement, but right, that's what they used. It was just hovering completely silent. Now, I say that was silent because the ship was silent, but this continuing boom was still going on from mm-hmm. somewhere else. So it wouldn't come in from the ship. They all started turning to each other in awe of what they were seeing. Then something clicked with Jared. He had seen this thing at least 10 times before flying extremely high in the sky, but he thought that it was a blimp. And he was super impressed that they were able to make one of these things that could fly that high and
yeah.
and deal with the atmospheric pressure and all that from those heights. But this night confirmed that it was not a blimp. It was a metallic cigar-shaped craft with three lights pulsating on each side.
True UFO.
He ran in to grab a camera, but this was the year 2000, and they only had a 1989 camcorder that needed to be plugged in to operate. So instead, he grabs a pair of binoculars. As he continues to watch, this booming sound is still going on. It's getting louder and louder. But he could now see five herring jets now following the craft. It looked like they were moving in slow motion, but that couldn't be the case because their afterburners were on. The next day, he was up bright and early because it's kind of hard to sleep after seeing something like that. And a friend of Jared's who had actually spent the night was in the car as Jared's driving him home. And as the friend gets out of the car, he turns and looks at Jared and said, "We really did see that thing last night, right?" And Jared confirmed, "Yeah, we did see that thing." So Jared was so dumbfounded, he doesn't remember his exact response to him other than that. When he got back to the house, he started doing some more research, and he thinks that it wasn't a UFO. He thinks that it's actually some type of a government craft that they're working on. And that's why the five jets were following it, not shooting it down. They were following it because they knew what it was. And they're just trying to keep it safe or whatever the case has been. So that's where we're at on that situation. But like they say in the commercials, Tracy, but wait, there's more. The next experience we're going to discuss took place in August of 1998. A friend of Jared's who lives in the neighborhood, he was going through a really rough breakup with a girl, and he needed somebody to talk to. So it was the middle of the night. He actually came to Jared's window, and he knocked on the window, which freaked Jared out because he lives on the third floor.
Yeah. What?
I'm just kidding.
Oh, stop.
He gets, you know, obviously wakes Jared up. They go outside to talk. They're laying in the driveway, looking up at the stars. This kid loves to look at the stars. I'll give him that. He should have been an astronomer.
Wow. It's a great thing to do. You should try it.
But they're laying in the driveway, looking at the stars, just chatting away. It was a clear night. Jared notices that there are two stars that are moving. They weren't just moving, Tracy. They were doing figure eights. These stars are just making figure eights over and over again. His friend also saw it, but he really didn't care because he was more focused on his issue, which was the breakup. So they let that part of it go, and they just start talking about the issue at hand, which was the breakup. And he told him all the same stuff. He always, "Oh, plenty of fish in the sea, blah, 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 blah." Whatever. Right. Whatever you want to say. And he said, "You know what? But I want to revisit this figure eight thing going on up here. So we'll talk about your problem tonight, but let's hook up again on the next full moon and let's kind of see if we see this happening again." On the day of the next full moon, Jared was working as a farmhand. And on this particular day, he drives up this road. It's only one road going up through this farmland. And he notices a waterfall in this pasture. And he thinks, "Oh, that's really cool. I'd like to come back to that at some point in time, but I got to go work now, but we'll come back to it some other time." And he, you know, thinking it'd be pretty easy to find, he don't give it a second thought. So now it's nighttime. Him and his friend are going to check out the stars, and they decide to do it out by this waterfall. Jared said, hey, let's go out that way, and they couldn't find it. He couldn't find it anywhere. They looked and looked and looked and just was never able to locate it. So Jared was actually so perplexed by it that he came back the next day in the daytime, and he still could never find the thing that he knows for a fact was there, and there's only one road that leads in and out, and it had to be on that road.
Right. But that's so weird.
He can't find it. On another night, Jared and a friend were walking in a nearby field. No flashlights, no phones, just complete darkness. Suddenly, they saw these huge shadows running towards them. There were five of them. They were the size of Clydesdales, he said. They ran out of the field towards his parents' house. While doing so, they passed the only other house on the road, and they hear a woman crying. They stopped. They start looking around to see if there's a woman that needs help. She continues to cry and beg for help. They just couldn't locate her. So they decided, you know what? We're just going to go get help. We obviously aren't being able to accomplish this ourselves. They cross the intersection and the two start up a hill. The road only had two trees. So it's pretty open to be able to see. You know what I'm saying? Wide open. Apparently, a dog was somewhere out there because they kept hearing it bark, but they couldn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
They just kept hearing the dog bark. Then the woman stopped crying for help. But they heard a car engine. They couldn't see a car, but they heard a car engine. No headlights, nothing.
I'd be scared to death.
So they went from a woman crying to a dog barking to the woman stopped crying.
Mm-hmm.
And now they hear a car engine. On the road, they then saw a car, no headlights or brake lights, slowly coming to a stop at the stop sign. Four people get out of the car. They were dressed in all black suits. They started searching all around the car. Jared assumes that they were searching for them. So he tells his buddy to hug a tree. Apparently, this makes you harder to see in the dark.
No way.
That's what I was told.
Huh.
After about 2 minutes, the four get back in the car and they leave. So the boys continue their trek. But here comes the car again, back from a different direction. The same four people get out of the car. Jared and his friend hide again. The four eventually get back in the car and decide, you know, I guess we're not finding what we want. So they get back in the car takes off, and the boys decide to get back to Jared's house as quick as possible. Trust me, there are way more stories on here that I could cover from Jared, but I had to leave some of them out.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were just too... I'm not going to say, they're minor, we'll say. They weren't that great of stories. But there was a bunch of them. But trust me, though, this next one's pretty cool. One night at his ex-in-law's house, it's the middle of the night. He can't sleep, so he decides to do some push-ups and sit-ups on the floor. He gets on the floor. The only light is coming from a fish tank. He goes to turn on his phone to give it some extra light in the room. I don't know why he didn't flip the light switch on, but he didn't. So as he pulls out his phone, he fills the room filled with what?
Dread.
Dread. The phone, then all on its own, dials 80 and then hits send. It connected. And what he heard coming from the phone speaker sounded like static and screaming. Screaming that was so loud that it sounded like people being burned alive.
Ugh.
He threw the phone across the room and he spent the rest of the night lying awake.
It seems like he likes the dark.
It does seem like that. All right, Tracy, we're going to take a quick sponsor break. And then I'll be back with one last story. All right. Jared had a childhood friend that had moved out of town, right?
Mm-hmm.
They decided to move back into town, and they purchased a very old home. This home was built in 1795. It had just been remodeled, though. Jared comes over to the house, and he's given a tour by his friend and his friend's girlfriend. He feels dread come over him while he's in the house. When they reach the staircase, Jared looks over and he asks if anything weird ever happens in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And his girlfriend blurts out, "See, he feels it too."
Oh.
Well, nothing else happened that particular day, but that would not be the case in January of 2018. The three were in the house when they heard three loud booms. So Jared initially thinks that it's maybe the furnace. But his friend's girlfriend says, "Well, that hasn't happened in a while." It suddenly happened again. So his friend was, I guess, trying not to act like there was something paranormal going on. He's like, "Huh, must have been a truck that passed or something."
Yeah.
But get this. The booms start happening in groups of threes. So boom, boom, boom. Something so violent that stuff started falling off the shelves in the room. But that's nothing. Because then gallons of water started pouring from the ceiling fan. Then carry-on Beatles started coming out of the ceiling fan.
Well, at least it was a Beatles fan.
The window blinds started to swing back and forth. A Mountain Dew bottle was actually thrown at Jared's head.
Oh.
So Jared had his dog with him that night. And the dog starts snarling. And it let loose with this low, guttural growl. Something he had never heard from that dog before. He said the dog did this for a good 30 seconds. So Jared knows his dog, obviously. And he knows his dog sees whatever this is, even though they didn't see what it was. It gets weirder, though. They look above the couch, and they see floating right above it is a huge black velvet-looking knot.
A knot?
Yeah. It kept coiling all around itself, making itself bigger and bigger. Jared shoves his hand inside of this black knot thing.
Whoa.
And he said it was the coldest feeling that he had ever felt, even colder than freezing cold. But right after that, that black knot dissipated and left. And that's the end of Jared's story. He'd be fun to hang with.
I mean, was that the last story he ever... Oh, no, said there were more.
Stories of seeing Bigfoot. He's had... Trust me, he has had everything happen. And I'm not going to say that Jared maybe embellishes a little bit, because that could be... Look, when I hear... Somebody has seen UFOs and ghosts and they feel dread and they've seen Bigfoot. I hate to be skeptical, but you got to be a little skeptical.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Now, trust me, people can see dead people and they see that their entire life. And that's one thing. But to have every type of paranormal event happen to you seems a little.
It's kind of lucky. You get to experience all of it.
Lucky could be a word.
Yeah.
Or it just could be that
annoying.
Maybe only some of that happened. And, you know, like I said, I don't know Jared. I just know that's a tough to believe somebody can have that many things going on. But who am I to disagree with what somebody sees?
Yeah. Don't act like you know him.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going to take another really quick sponsor break. We'll be back with news and news on the cruise, blah, 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 blah. All right, Tracy, lots of fun stuff going on. Our first live event is getting really close to being sold out in Casadega. That is April 27th with History Goes Bump.
I know. I'm excited for that show.
Go to our website and get your tickets because there were only 30 to start with.
Yeah, right.
It'll be a fun show. And they got good food there.
They do have good food.
And maybe after the show, maybe we'll all drive up to the Devil's Chair. Oh. Which, by the way, If you listen to Lore just did an episode, and part of the episode was on the Devil's Chair right there. It's called St. Helens or Mount Helens, but that's actually Casadega. It's right there next to it. It's 5 minutes up the road.
Okay.
So you'll hear, like I said, I think it's St. Helens, but you'll hear him say it that, but it's Casadega. He mentions Casadega and stuff in there too.
So. Yeah, it's pretty cool because there was a beer can there and what else?
There was the beer can, but there was nobody else there. It's like I said, it's super easy to find.
Yeah.
This is a very small cemetery. Mm-hmm. Very small. And so we got that going on. August 17th, we have our birthday show, also with History Goes Bump, at an awesome location that's right on the beach in St. Augustine.
Yep.
So August 17th, there's only 60 tickets available. Well, there were 60. They're not now because we've sold a boatload of tickets for both of those already.
Good.
Those are the only two live events we're doing this year.
Yeah, period. I know it. It's crazy, ain't it?
Yep. And then the cruise. Mm-hmm. I got an update from Robin at Vacation Experts. Been a bunch more people signed up and more supposed to sign up. So it's going to be a fun time. Go get that. That's 5-day cruise. It's going from Galveston, Texas to Mexico. It's going to be a blast.
Nice. I can't wait.
Tracy, what do you got going on over there?
Well, we had a lot of iTunes reviews this week. Thank you guys so much for that.
Please keep those coming.
Yeah, please. Thank you so much. We had Mojo Lobster, Sam, Susan Bowman, Jay Suck. I don't know if it's what it's supposed to be. 1983. Yates Wob, I think it is. Aiden's Mom. And then Foggy and Sunny. Or Foggy to Sunny, my bad. Yeah,
I will say again, as she butchers all those names.
Don't I though? I don't understand this.
I would say because she's just going by what the iTunes name is. If you will leave your real name, just like Lisa or Henry or whatever, in the review, just kind of end it with your name. That way we can actually say your real name on the air.
Yeah, because... It'll
sound much better.
I don't know why. I just can't.
We didn't have any new Patreons this week, so there's no names there. Other than that, I hope you guys enjoyed the story.
Yeah.
Oh, I do want to add in, we are completely revamping our YouTube page. And I know I've mentioned it before, but now we're all in. We keep putting new videos up. I'm putting most of the Dead Time videos up there as well. But yeah, we're really trying to get that thing going. If you guys can go subscribe and watch a few videos, I don't care if you just put them on when you go to bed and just let them play while you go to sleep. We have to accumulate a certain amount of hours of watched videos, and we really hadn't been putting anything up there until recently. So we have to accumulate so many hours of watched video before we can ever make any money off YouTube. And that's just another revenue source we're trying to get going. So if you could do that, that would be a huge help.
You guys are awesome.
Thank you, guys. We'll talk to you next week.
Have a great week. Be blessed.